This episode is sponsored by Lawrence B. Keller of Physician Financial Services. Larry has been dealing with disability insurance and term life insurance for physicians and other healthcare professionals since 1990. In many cases, Larry has access to guaranteed standard issue disability insurance policies for medical residents and fellows that does not require medical underwriting. To learn more or to have your existing policies reviewed, feel free to reach out to Larry at 516-677-6211, by email to lkeller@physicianfinancialservices.com, or visit www.physicianfinancialservices.com. While he might not be a doctor's first phone call regarding their insurance needs, he is often their last.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Nailed It Ortho podcast. My name is Dr. Cole, and you are tuned into our finance series. And we have, yes, a repeat guest today here on the podcast. We have David Mandel back again. Now, if y'all don't remember, he was actually the guest of our third episode of our finance series, and he talked about finding financial advisors. But this time we're going to talk a little bit about asset protection. And if you have no idea what that is, don't worry. We are going to explain what that is. We're going to explain how to protect your assets. You know, you can get sued. You can get sued as a resident. You can get sued as a fellow. You can get sued as an attending. And other things can happen as well. So in today's episode, we really dive deeply into asset protection, how to protect what's yours, different things that you can use, maybe what a trust is, maybe even talk about different ways to protect your home. So we talk about a lot of different things. So if you have not already, hit the subscribe button so you get updated every time we have new content and new things that we're doing. And I tell a friend about the podcast. That would help us out a bunch. And if you have not left a five-star review, please do that. That would help us out a ton. All right, everybody, until next time, go ahead and enjoy the episode.
You are now listening to Nailed It, the Orthopedic Surgery Podcast, featuring Drs. Jay Fitz and Wendell Cole.
David, welcome back to the Nailed It Ortho Podcast. So happy to have you on again, and we're going to talk some asset protection this time, but welcome back.
Great to be back. And for those of you who didn't know, but Wendell was on our podcast, the Wealth Planning for the Modern Physician podcast. So check that out. That came out in, I think, end of May. So go check us out, Wealth Planning for the Modern Physician podcast, and you'll hear him on the other side of the mic. So it's great to be back.
It was a great experience, great podcast. I listened to it. You know, it's always, even being a podcast host, listening to your voice again on a different podcast, it's always a little bit different.
Right.
But no, it was a great episode. And thank you so much for having me on. And so let's go ahead and jump into today's episode or today's topic, asset protection. So again, we have an audience that for the most part has just been learning about biology and medical things. And, you know, we're now venturing into the field of finance. But what is asset protection? And then why should us as orthopedists care about it?
Yeah, so it's a little early for you guys to be too concerned, but I think it's important to get on your radar. So asset protection planning, you know, my background is a lawyer. We also a wealth manager. And, you know, you folks will be able to see our bio. But I think the part of me being a lawyer is really important because I practiced law for 12 years before forming a wealth management company. And in that practice, I really specialized in asset protection, estate planning, tax, et cetera. But the way I view asset protection, it's bigger than a field of law. It's actually a discipline of wealth planning, of which legal tools are part of it. But it's all dedicated to helping clients, i.e. you, listening to this, protect what you're building from potential lawsuits. That's the whole vision. And why orthopedists should care about it? Well, I'll get real specific, then I'll get broad. Many of you may know of this legal case, this verdict that came down this year in the first part of 2023 against an orthopedic surgeon who was taking care of Chris Maragos, who was a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. And the verdict came back against the physician and the practice, a very well-known orthopedic practice, for $43 million. And they split that up about $29 million against the physician, about $14 million against the practice. So I want to make two points there. Most of you, when you come out of practice, right now your fellowship residency, for I know many of you listening, you're going to be covered by the institution's policy. And you really, and you're an employee and you really don't have much risk exposure. For those of you listening, practice is a different story, right? You're in a practice. You may have a practice provided policy, but you're not employed anymore. You might be, but there's more liability there. And certainly as you become a partner, even more so. And the typical insurance policies are $1 million, $3 million. So you can imagine being an orthopedic surgeon and you're facing now a $29 million judgment against you, and your insurance only covers for two, three, even some of the best surgeons taking care of a lot of professional athletes have $5 million, $6 million. So what does that mean? That means that that plaintiff who has that judgment can come after that doctor's personal assets for the balance. And the second piece I want to mention is in this example, and again, it's an outlier example, so I don't want to make people think this happens every day. But in that example, the other $14 million was against the practice at large, which means all of his partners are on the hook for that, and they had nothing to do with this patient.
Scary. Okay?
Very scary. And this is a top, I'm not going to name names, but anybody can look this up with a 2-second Google search. It's one of the better orthopedic practices well known in the country, based in the Northeast. And obviously, the doc who's taking care of a professional NFL team is a really well-known and well-respected surgeon. This is one piece of example. The reason I got into asset protection planning all the way back in the early 90s when I was in law school, my father, who is a radiologist, chairman of a practice in Massachusetts, said, listen, I'm trying to do the best for my patients, just like his father, who is a physician, and my brother, but I'm going to miss something. There's going to be bad results. Nobody's perfect. And even if you are perfect, you might still have a poor outcome, even if you followed all the standard of care. And so he got interested in protecting assets because he said, listen, I'm doing all these studies, all these X-rays, MRIs, all this kind of stuff. I know things are going to get missed, and I don't want to bank all of my family's savings on the fact that my insurance covers me. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the reason, big picture, docs should be thinking about it, certainly surgeons especially. But I think anybody should spend a little bit of time as they're building wealth in their future, which you're going to be doing, to protect
it. Yeah. And, you know, that lawsuit that you're talking about, you know, we talk about it amongst my own, when I was in residency, our own residency program, and we're all trying to avoid things like that happening. And sure. Everybody's kind of like, you know, now it's at the front forefront of a lot of people's minds after that lawsuit. And just like you said, those listening, you can Google it and find it very quickly. And one of the things that you mentioned is insurance, which we're going to touch base on a little bit later. I just want to be able to make a clear distinction. What is the difference between asset protection and estate planning? Because sometimes this may get confused, or see, you know, I just want the listeners to know that there is a difference. So what is the difference?
Yeah. And listen, everything we're talking about and even in more depth comes out of our books, which you can get for free by listening to this podcast. And we'll tell you how at the end, and on the show notes page, we'll have links to that. You can use a nailed it a code. So, you know, if you're listening, you don't have to write all this down. All right. Because I know it's all new to you. Right. You haven't heard of this. But estate planning is really what happens. What you're concerned about with estate planning is what happens when you either pass away. Okay. After you're gone, taking care of spouses or family members or charities, what have you. And if you ever get incapacitated, as physicians, you know what that means, right? I mean, someone has documents like a living will or a healthcare proxy. Who can make decisions for you if you can't make them yourselves? Obviously, if you're dead, you're not making any decisions. And if you're incapacitated, you can't. So that's estate planning. Now, sometimes those worlds blend in. I mentioned when I was practicing law, they did, because you might use a trust that has some asset protection benefits, helping you protect assets while you're alive, so you can live on them in retirement. But there may also be some estate planning elements to them as well. What happens after you pass away? Okay. So they're really distinct. You can say, listen, I don't care what happens to me after I'm gone. I have no dependents. I'll leave it all to my dog. But I'm really concerned about protecting what I'm building for myself. And that's asset protection. That makes sense?
Yep, makes perfect sense. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier that, you know, these different insurance plans or, you know, if you're with a group, that plan may cover up to $2-3 million. And then you mentioned maybe $5 million if you have a really, really good plan. Can you just give us like a broad overview of the these insurances that we may get? You know, is this malpractice insurance we get? Sometimes I'll hear things about tail end insurance, umbrella, you know, all these different terms. So what exactly, like, you know, what are these different types of insurances that we can get? Because we know that, just like you said, it doesn't protect us against everything.
Yeah. So the topic of insurance, even in malpractice, it's probably another episode that you can have. We can get someone else on who's a better expert on this. And insurance in general, because one of the things I think we might have talked about the first time was disability insurance, right? Because you're much more likely to get disabled, unfortunately, especially as a surgeon, than lose assets in a lawsuit. Okay. But so that's important too. But let's just talk about what's relevant today, which is the malpractice insurance and other liability protection insurances. Certainly, I think of asset protection planning as a three-legged stool. And one of those legs is insurance. Okay. I have it as a lawyer. I have it as in a wealth management context. Every physician nearly should have it. Although I will say when my brother left training in New York as a cardiologist, he came down to South Florida and the malpractice was so expensive at that time. Imagine paying $100,000 in premium for like $500,000 of coverage. It's just not worth it at that point. And it was so that the state in the area of South Florida, you could get privileges at the hospital. You could, you know, have a regular practice and not have malpractice insurance. You just needed to put some money up as a bond and let your patients know you didn't have it. And that's what he did for a couple of years right out of fellowship. So you can imagine you're even more concerned about protecting yourself because you have no insurance, right?
Yeah.
So insurance is important to have, but I think until any doc in practice is always, you know, weighing how much they should get and how expensive it is, okay? So, yeah, I'm sure the $43 million judgment doc said, yeah, I wish I had a lot more, but not the year before he was probably in practice 20, 30 years and had never had a lawsuit of this magnitude and, you know, didn't want to pay just money going out of your pocket. Just like, you know, God, I'm paying so much in auto insurance. I've never gotten in an accident, you know? So at least with AXA, you got other crazy drivers around. With malpractice, it's really just you, you know, so you don't have that risk. So malpractice is important, but there are a whole bunch of other insurances, Wendell, that if you come out and you become a private practice physician, that you're going to want to consider. Okay. And I don't want to go into all of them, but I'll just highlight one or two. Sure. Yeah. One is cyber or privacy data insurance. I have a very successful orthopedic practice as a client who that doesn't have a malpractice issue. They have a big lawsuit issue because they had a big breach of all their HIPAA data of all their patients. And it's a multi-million dollar lawsuit. And that's not covered by malpractice. Mm. Okay. So all this information got out there in a hack and their practice is on the hook for it. Okay. We have that kind of insurance at a wealth management firm. Of course, we have everybody's, you know, if they're doing insurance, life insurance, we have their health info and we have a bunch of their financial info, right? So we have to have cyber data. Then there's also a policy like employee liability. What if your employee does something, right? There's plenty of cases where, especially if you have famous athletes or, you know, even in small towns, people, you know, they're working in your office and now they have access to, you know, Jimmy Downs the Road health insurance. Or I mean, health data, and it turns out, well, that, you know, Jimmy is in an argument with, you know, Sammy's friend, and she lets her know that, oh, he's got this, you know, that all comes back to you because they're an employee in your practice. Not to mention other things they could be doing, right? So there's other insurances even beyond malpractice that if you have a practice, you're going to want to consider and getting with a good agent and laying it out. But I'll come back to the point I made first, which is you don't want to be overinsured and no one likes paying more than they need to, right?
Right.
So that's why asset protectionist planning is important because insurance is good to have solid basic insurance, maybe more depending on the kind of patients you're taking care of. If they're professional athletes, obviously that's a different issue. But beyond that, go to asset protection planning to give you protection, even if there is no insurance coverage, and sometimes you can't get it for different kinds of risks, you have some level of protection of your assets.
And, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier, we talked about the case up in Northeast where they got sued for $20, $30, $40 million. And some of it was on the surgeon himself, and some of it was on the practice.
Right.
You know, they got to pay that out. And, you know, we've been talking about different types of assets. So what kind of assets are we talking about protecting? So what, you know, what are exactly when it gets to nitty gritty?
Well, primarily it's a client's personal asset. So a doc will come to me. I talked to, I think it was a neurosurgeon yesterday. I can't remember what specialty it was, but said, listen, I'm interested in this. You know, I saw your video on this law case, or, you know, read the book, you know, and I said, okay, let's talk about what assets you've got. Oh, you have a home. Okay. Well, how much is that worth? And how is it owned? Is it owned in your name? Is it owned in you and your wife's name, you and your husband's name, et cetera? You have a retirement account, like a qualified plan, like a 401k. Okay, let's write that down. You have some other investments in your own name. You have a rental property that you do an Airbnb for, right? I mean, all of what my task is when I'm helping a client is to find out what they own and then lay out, educate them on their options, how those assets are exposed and how they're maybe protected already before they even did anything, because there are laws that protect them. And then, okay, what's still exposed? What are your options, costs and benefits? Always thinking about costs and benefits, right? To protect those, okay? That's at the personal level. If I come into a practice, like I'm engaged right now, I'll be coming in to do a presentation to an anesthesiology group in Texas in a couple of weeks. And they're very concerned because there was a big case against an anesthesiology group in that town. Yep. And so I'm coming in and they're concerned about how is their qualified plan protected? How is their accounts receivable exposed or protected? They've got, you know, a piece of property, real estate. How can we better protect that? Looking at the practice assets. So at the practice, we're looking at practice assets. And personally, we're looking at, hey, what does the family own?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And so we touched a little bit earlier about, you know, again, this lawsuit that we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
And so say, you know, you have somebody that comes to you, you know, they're interested in protecting their assets. They have a house, they have a rental property. They just joined a private practice group. You know, they may have a company or two, and they come to you and they say, we want our assets protected.
Yep.
And so now maybe we could kind of get into some tools that you can like use to help protect this physician. So let's cover exempt assets first.
Yeah. So one thing I want to say before we get into the tools is timing is an issue. So if any of those docs in that practice came and called me today, said, hey, I should be reading your book. You wrote a book called The Doctor's Asset Protection Guide all the way back in 1998, 25 years ago. I guess that makes me old. I want to work with you because I'm one of the partners in this practice and I'm concerned. The issue, on every state, there's something called either called fraudulent transfer law or avoidable transaction laws, et cetera. And they all basically mean the same thing. You can't wait until you have a reasonably foreseeable liability and try to protect against that liability. Now, there's 1,000 cases about what reasonably foreseeable is. But I can tell you what it definitely is when they already have a judgment against your practice. That's too clear.
Late.
That's too late. Okay. Yeah. It's probably even too late if you are operating on a patient and you know there's a bad outcome coming, and then you call me. Okay. That's probably because you probably know, okay, it's reasonably foreseeable that that's going to turn into liability. Okay.
Okay.
What's not reasonably foreseeable is you, and I try to get docs to do this every day. Coast is clear. Yeah. You're going to see patients for the rest of your career. There's something that might happen, but there's not any reasonably foreseeable of any one patient. So let's put it in place now. Or if that doc from that practice that we're talking about came to me, I'd say, listen, hopefully you can settle something out. I'm sure you will. You'll work with your lawyers to do it. It'll cost you something, but it's not going to ruin your career and ruin your net worth. So let's use this as a learning experience and put this in place for everything you're going to do in the future. Right? So it's all got to, it's just like you can't get, you know, insurance on your Airbnb window when there's already a fire, right? You needed that insurance before the fire started, right? Yep. So that's the whole point. Okay. So I want to say that first. That's a caveat.
Yeah.
Okay. Now what tools? Again, three-legged stool. We already talked about one, which is insurance. anything from your auto insurance to homeowners to your rental property insurance to an umbrella policy. That's all important. We help clients with that, but there are limitations to that. We don't want to be overinsured. Nobody likes paying huge premiums of, you know, more than they want, more than they need. So what are the other two stools, two legs of the stool? The second leg is what are called exempt assets. Okay. Again, a whole chapter in the book on this. Happy to chat with anybody, but every state in the federal law basically says, here are a bunch of assets that in this state are exempt, and they're exempt from filing in bankruptcy. So even somebody who has a judgment that needs to file bankruptcy, it is possible that that physician that we're talking about may file for bankruptcy with that $29 million judgment against them. And in whatever state they're in, there's a statute that says you can get rid of your creditors in Chapter 7 and keep all these assets. Okay, that's how people come out of bankruptcy, especially in states like Florida, where I live, multimillionaires. You could come out a billionaire. Because as an example, in Florida, where I live, exempt assets include your home of an unlimited value. So you can have a $30 million property in South Beach, file for bankruptcy, and you can keep that entire property and all the value in it. Okay. Hmm. We also have exemptions for qualified plans. So as much as is in your 401k, as much as is in your IRA, okay? And that's not odd, okay? Having an unlimited homestead exemption is odd. That's about five or six states. But most states protect a lot, if not all, of money in qualified plans and IRAs. There are also big states that have big exemptions for life insurance, for annuities. So the first thing we want to know when I'm working with a client is what state they're in, and then educate them about the freebies, quote unquote, because every state has those. And a lot of docs don't even realize what's exempt in their state.
Okay. No, that's good to know. And again, just kind of reiterating, so you have this reference of kind of the three-legged stools, and the first leg kind of being the insurance and that whole umbrella of things, you know, the umbrella insurance, the real estate insurance, whatever that may be. This second leg are these exempt assets. And please correct me if I'm wrong, this can be state dependent.
So this is going to be completely state dependent.
It is state dependent.
Yeah.
And so these are going to be things like your properties, your retirement accounts, like your 401k, your homestead exemption. These are things, just like you said, that are like the freebies that each state has that, again, you may not even know about. And so what are some, I guess, what maybe was the third leg? I'm begging to know now.
Yeah. So the third leg is really legal tools. And that's a pretty broad, umbrella of potential. That ranges from what lawyers like me call titling, meaning how you own assets, okay? And again, in about 15 to 20 states, if you're married, there's something called tenancy by the entirety. And again, a lot of docs don't know about this, and that's natural because I wouldn't if I hadn't gone to law school. But yep. TBE, in the states that have protection form, and a lot of them are on the East Coast just because it's an old form, the West Coast states generally don't have them, you can protect the asset completely against a claim against either spouse. So for example, again, in Florida, I'm married. So I have, let's say, a bank account, which I do, Bank of America, in tenancy by the entirety. It's one of the check boxes that I'm sure a lot of people didn't even know to check. They just check, oh, joint, or in my individual name, obviously, if you're not married, that's kind of an easy one. But tenancy by the entirety, because I have it in that, someone could literally have won a $1 billion judgment against me. And they can't touch one dime of that account because I own it in tenancy by the entirety with my wife. They'd have to have a judgment against me and my wife. Mm. Okay. So that can be, again, free. It is free. Way for clients, docs in certain states or certain assets, meaning in some states, I want to say Virginia, but I could be wrong on this. It only works for real estate. It doesn't work for bank accounts. In some states, it works for both. Again, we got to look at that individually for state. In many Western states like California, where I practiced law for 10 years, that's a community property state, as is Texas. There are many states that are community property. In a community property state, if you're married, it doesn't matter how the asset is titled. If it came in to the marriage once you were married and it wasn't inherited, meaning you earned the money to bought the asset, you could put it in the spouse's name, you could put it in the dog's name. It's community property. So if anybody in the community, i.e. either spouse, gets sued, they have access to it. So legal tools. First, again, we're going to start with the easiest. Let's see what the ownership titling rules are in your state. See what your situation is. Can we take advantage of some of those? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And then, so that's mostly for spouses. So if you're married, those are the good things or something that you can use for tools and on how you, just like you said, how you own or how you title your assets. What about for those that are single? Are there any things for those, that group of people?
Not from a titling point of view. Okay.
Okay.
For titling point of view, or for like for any docs in states that don't have tenancy by the entirety, and there are even assets that don't really lend themselves for that, we got to look to the other piece of legal tools, which are actually creating legal structures, okay, for assets. And those could be anything, and we won't get to, in depth of all of it. Again, get the books, corporations, limited liability companies, limited partnerships, and a whole bunch of kinds of trusts, okay? Those are all legal structures that have their medicines, right? They have their side effects. They have their pros and cons. They cost a certain amount of money to start up and on an annual basis. They all have, they're in my toolkit, right? My medicine bag that when I'm working with a client, that I'm educating on, these are the kind of tools that we could use. And here's why I recommend this tool for you for this asset and maybe this tool for that asset. And that's why a lot of people think asset protection planning is done by a lawyer. And they're not wrong, but the lawyers do one leg of the three stools, not all. Mm.
And David, one quick question. I've heard some people say, when you're signing with the practice, maybe you don't sign with your name, you sign it in an LLC. Is there any truth to that? And does that help protect anything? If you're signing at a practice or you're doing, I guess for locums, it makes a little bit more sense that you're a company and, there's some tax benefits for that. But for as far as signing with, practices and having them sign under an LLC that you own, does that do anything towards asset protection? Does that have any type of advantage?
No. Okay. So you kind of answered yourself, which is there is a tax benefit. So I've seen practices that have like a hub and spoke model. I don't know if I've seen it in orthopedics, but certainly in other practices where there's a main entity, that's the billing entity that collects from all the payers, Medicare, et cetera. Then each doc gets paid through their separate entity, like a PLLC or PC, which just means professional LLC or professional corporation. And then at that level, they can do a bunch of write-offs and tax planning that they don't have to get all their docs to agree on, which is when you become a partner, you will see that that's not easy to get a bunch of docs and surgeons to agree on. Right. So that's your future. So having that hub and spoke model has some tax benefits and planning benefits, but we all, and I say we meaning lawyers, financial advisors, doctors, accountants, any professional, we can't stand behind a professional entity and say, well, I don't have any liability in that, because then you'd never need malpractice insurance, right? You would just say, hey, I have a PC, you sue the PC, but you can't get to me. No, that's why as a lawyer, I need malpractice insurance, or a doctor, or anyone else. The entity does not protect us from our own acts and omissions. Okay. It could protect you from sending, the receptionist out to get lunch and they get into a car accident. Okay. That's in furtherance of the business of the medical practice. That's not involving your act and omission. They might have a claim against the corporation, the practice. But they shouldn't have a good claim against you, the doctor. Okay. So that's why you still want entities. Okay. They're still important, but they're not going to protect you from your own acts and omissions. Okay.
Okay. And switching gears here a little bit, we mentioned a little bit earlier about the spouses and we talked about how you title things like tenant by entirety and things like that.
Yeah.
And another big question, a lot of things that I've seen is when people get married, they talk about getting prenuptial agreements. Should doctors be getting prenuptial agreements when they're getting married? Does that really help protect their assets?
Like, yeah. So
I know there's a difficulty.
Yeah, no. So, so the answer to that is not should. That's a tough answer for me to give because the conversation is not an easy one, right? Full disclosure, I don't have a prenup with my wife, okay? And I was pretty advanced at this point. I didn't get married until I was almost 40, okay?
Yep.
I thought about it, and I certainly have clients who have, and certainly there's a lot of clients who on their second marriage get the prenup because they've gone through the pain of the first marriage and divorce, and oftentimes the person they're marrying may have as well, right? And they have assets and they're older and it's a different situation than somebody who's younger in their first marriage. But from a purely planning point of view, if it can be done without an undue burden of stress, it can be helpful, not only just on, splitting assets upon a divorce, but even things like, you know, childcare and a whole bunch of issues. I mean, the bottom line is, and you're a young person and you get this probably already, but marriage is, you know, a romantic element, but it's also a legal partnership.
Yep.
And so there's those two pieces. You would never get into any kind of legal partnership with anybody that didn't involve the romance part without a written agreement of what's going to happen, on the way out. I mean, that's just the way it is, right? But very few people get them because of all the reasons,
romance.
Right?
Yeah.
So I can't say should, but to answer the second part of your question, are they effective? Yes, they are. Now, I'm not a family law attorney. And again, family law is on a state-by-state basis. So every state has its own rules. But generally, you know, each side needs to have an attorney to help them draft it. Right. It has to be overall, like, not completely unfair on, you know, what's called unconscionable. It has to have a certain, you know, timing elements, like you can't spring it on this fiance the night before the wedding and say sign under duress. Right. You know, there's a bunch of things that need to happen. But if it's done right, it can be. And especially, you know, I think, you know, I don't think it's an unreasonable thing, especially, you know, when you have two spouses coming or two potential spouses coming together who all each have their own assets or professional lives. And it doesn't have to be a deal breaker in terms of something that is emotionally fraught. So, you know, I tell people that it should be on their minds to consider it. Not everybody's going to do it, but it certainly is effective to kind of lay out what would happen if the marriage dissolves.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, David, I thought this has been, you know, great, great episode. I mean, we talked about a good amount of things. I always keep coming back to your three-legged stool reference, you know, so we talked about the insurances and all the different types of insurances. We talked about the exempt assets, which are state dependent, you know, 401ks, properties, homestead exemptions. And then you also talked about some of these kind of legal tools, per se, you know, that can be used to shield assets, LLCs, trusts, corporations. You know, where can me and the rest of the listeners that want to learn a little bit more about asset protection, where can we learn some more about this? And actually, I have one more quick follow-up after that, which is, as residents, how often do you see, how important is this for trainees?
Yeah. So where you can learn more, certainly, you know, we'll put the information up on our books. So we have, you know, in the Wealth Planning for the Modern Physician book, we've got 70 pages out of the three something on just asset protection. You know, there's a tax section, there's asset protection, there's investing. And in that, I go into a chapter on LLCs and limited partnerships, a chapter on trust, a chapter on exempt assets, a chapter on insurances. So that's a good resource. You know, we do a lot of videos on a place called ViewMedi, which I don't know how many people are, you know, you guys are using that. You use it. So if you go to the finance and taxes section, we've got a whole videos on lots of topics, and they're all pretty short, around 10 minutes. And I personally done probably half a dozen on asset protection, including one on this latest case that we've been talking about. So those are two places. And certainly, There's lots of others, but those are two I would start with. Now, how important is it for trainees? Not very important. Okay. Because first of all, to have asset protection be important, you got to have assets. And I found that most folks coming up, you know, their assets minus liabilities is a negative number. So they're kind of de facto asset protected. So I think this is important to let people know. The big takeaway, and I say this again, I just did a talk for at Cleveland Clinic, a webinar last week for their residents in plastic surgery. And I did it on all sorts of areas of finance, more like the one we did the first time I was on Wendell. And I did a little bit on asset protection, and I'll say the same thing I said then, which is, I just want you to take away that there's something out there. There's a discipline out there. There are experts out there that can help you when you're at that stage, so you don't have to be overly stressed. Because what I see is docs who are up at night, not about the medicine. They're up at night about the liability. They know what they need to do. They're trained on that. But they're like my father, who is like, I know I'm going to do the right thing every single time, but it's not going to work out right every single time. And I don't want to, you know, bank everything I've been working on and building for myself and my family because of one bad case could take it away. So what can I do about it? And I just want your listeners to remember, hey, that Mandel, yeah, he talked about that. I should go back and check that out on ViewMoney or the book, et cetera. So when the time is right, they know that resource, they're not on their own. They don't have to figure it out on their own. Does that make sense? Yeah,
makes perfect sense. Again, I think this was a great episode. And we talked a little bit about this off air before we started, but I understand that your firm is working on a subscription that you'll be offering, you know, doctors like myself, you know, other trainees, even those that are, you know, going out and starting to practice. Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about that and kind of just plug yourself in here?
Yeah. So there's a little bit of I need help on this from folks because we're a wealth management firm and we specialize in working with physicians. You know, we have over 1,500 we work with, and we have a lot of docs who are extremely successful, exactly like you and all your listeners are going to be. And they have the wealth, they have the assets that are needing protected. They're making enough money that taxes becomes really important, tax reduction. They have the assets that we can manage in a way that we can charge them a fee that's fair to them and make money and help them build their wealth. So all these docs, the kinds, you know, that you guys will be down the road are in our sweet spot. And we've been helping them for my entire career. But I know, and you know, that there's a lot of help that we could be giving to docs of your age and in fellowship, in residency, even in medical school, and certainly in the first couple of years of practice, where they can't really afford to work with us yet. And that's something we've really tried to think about, how we can solve that. And I think the way we solve it, and we're not the only ones in the marketplace, but I think we're going to have the best offering for young docs, is to do a subscription. A monthly subscription, just like you'd pay for Netflix. And that's where a lot of services are going. And everybody you're listening to this, I'm sure, has multiple subscriptions, whether they're podcasts or Netflix or whatever it is. Okay. Well, we have a great idea, and we've been brainstorming and working on this for a bit, on the kinds of services and education and tools that we would offer the young docs. But I'm not a young doc. So I can have my ideas, but I'm not you folks. So what I am going to ask of you, and you and I were talking about this offline, and we'll put this in a QR code and a link, is 5 minutes of any of your time, which is get on this survey that we have. And it's basically, it's anonymous, so we don't need to know who you are. Just go through the list of things that we might provide in that kind of offering. Full wealth management. I mean, everything from asset protection to investing to budgeting, et cetera. All the tools and ideas that we've put out there. And tell us what's important. Give us, you know, one to five. Five important, one not important. Tell us what you think a reasonable fee to charge this is. We want to build this with feedback from docs like you. So we build it the way you want it, not the way I want it. And so we're excited about it. Our goal in 2023 is to come out with this by the end of the year. So now we're in an info gathering stage, and we'd really appreciate, you know, everybody from Wendell to everybody listening, filling this out. It'll take you a couple minutes, and it really help us help you guys.
Well, perfect. We're going to put the link to that in the description for this podcast. So for those that are listening, please go help out and fill out this survey. David, again, it's been great having you on. Always a pleasure. I always learn a lot every time we talk. And always, welcome back on the podcast anytime you want to come on. So again, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And for those who are listening, go and leave us a rating. Tell us how much you enjoyed this podcast episode by leaving a review. And until next time.
That was another fire episode on the finance series. We talked all about asset protection. We hope that you all enjoyed it. Please go and leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, however you listen to us, Spotify. That would help us out a bunch. And tell one person about us. Don't be so, you have to spread the love. That's what we need to do. We need to spread the love out to some other people. So let us help us by telling one person about the podcast. That would help us out a bunch. All right, until next time. This episode is sponsored by Lawrence B. Keller of Physician Financial Services. Larry has been dealing with disability insurance and term life insurance for physicians and other healthcare professionals since 1990. In many cases, Larry has access to guaranteed standard issue disability insurance policies for medical residents and fellows that does not require medical underwriting. To learn more or to have your existing policies reviewed, feel free to reach out to Larry at 516-677-6211, by email to lkeller@physicianfinancialservices.com, or visit www.physicianfinancialservices.com. While he might not be a doctor's first phone call regarding their insurance needs, he is often their last.